Right. Good evening, everybody. So this week we're continuing our series of From the Rabbi's Desk, but a little bit different this week in the sense that normally the two options for questions are completely unrelated to each other. This week I happen to have gotten two shailas that have a lot of very similar themes. Well, I don't think I'm going to have time to discuss the details of both shailas, so we'll probably still have to choose one or the other, but the difference between one and the other is probably not going to be like as stark as it normally is. So here are the two shailas. Shaila number one. There is a family that lives in Canada, in Edmonton or something, and they're a tremendous balei chesed, and they often take in foster children from time to time. They'll take in a child for a couple of weeks, for a couple of months sometimes, get the kid back on track and until they find a more permanent home for the child. And the way it works in Canada, apparently, is that the government sets up all of the foster homes, and they have like a subcategory or a subgroup for each religion so that they could place the children in the appropriate homes. They could place Jewish children in Jewish homes and Catholic children in Catholic homes because they want to keep them in what they know and what they're familiar with. That's most healthy for the children. So unfortunately, due to COVID, there's a tremendous shortage of homes to place children, particularly of Jewish homes. Their COVID was not good for Shalom Bayis in a lot of places, and it was not good for people who have otherwise have issues and had to be inside for a long time. So there are a lot of children that need homes. There aren't that many Jewish homes to take all of those children. So there is this family that took in a teenage girl who was brought up in a conservative Jewish home. So she was placed in an Orthodox Jewish home. And they just found out, though, the family that's fostering her found out that she is adopted, meaning that her conservative parents, who fell apart and couldn't take care of her anymore, adopted her when she was a baby. So at first they weren't getting a straight answer whether she was adopted or not, but then ultimately the agency informed them that she in fact was adopted. We don't have a record of any gerus. The parents are not exactly forthcoming. They're still denying that she was adopted, but there is a record of that. But there's no record of whether there was a gerus done or not. And now this family has this young lady living in their home. And now normally the way it would work is they'd hang on, support her and house her and show her affection and nurturing and caring for like I said before, a period of time until they found like a more permanent place for her to go. And the problem is that with this, in the current predicament, in the current situation, if they were to say at some point, okay, we're ready to move on, we're ready to, meaning it's the foster parents have the right to say at any point, this isn't working for our family. The influence on the younger children or whatever else, they have the right to say, this isn't working for our family. It's not like a long-term commitment. But the problem is, if they were to move on and they were to say this isn't working for our family, she's very likely going to be placed in a Catholic home. There just aren't any Jewish homes. So their shaila is, are they allowed to give her up? Are they allowed to say goodbye to her, considering that she came from a conservative Jewish home and now she's going to end up in a Catholic home? And on the flip side of that shaila, the very same shaila, the very same case, the family also wants to know, she's a teenager. Sometimes she likes to cook for herself. So she'll make herself some pasta or whatever. Is that bishalakum? Do they have to worry that it's bishalakum and they're not allowed to eat the food? Is it traping up the galim? So that is shaila number one. So what could be a similar shaila? Meaning that sounds like somewhat of an unusual shaila. So there is a similar shaila as follows. I just got today from an OUJLIC rabbi. He writes as follows. Hi Rebbe, interesting shaila. I have a student. Mother isn't Jewish, father is, which means not Jewish, right? She did a conservative conversion a couple of years ago, which means I don't know, maybe. And she considers herself Jewish and tries to keep kosher but is not Shomer Shabbos. A family friend of hers just passed away, and the funeral will be taking place at 4 p.m. today in a Roman Catholic church. And she asked me if she's allowed to go. How should I advise her? Right? So that is shaila number two. So shaila number one, both relating to conservative potential conservative conversions, meaning in the first case, in all likelihood, if a conservative family adopted her, they probably converted, or I don't know, likelihood, but there's a reasonable likelihood that they converted her into a conservative conversion. And in the second case, we know she had a conservative conversion, so, you know, what's their Jewish status and the ancillary issues of bishlakum and going into a church? Those are the side issues that come up in both of these cases. So, shaila number one or shaila number two? They're already voting in the Zoom. So let's do the what?
Zoom voters
don't
count.
Zoom voters count. Maybe we should have like some sort of like a Zoom voters like 2/3 of the vote. Or did that not work out in this country? Is that not something that we're supposed to do? So so let's start with the
Rebbe has to take the same approach as Rabbi Simon. He says Zoom is garnished. But also you can pay shiva calls over Zoom. So it's both.
Okay. So I have no idea what to do with that. So let's start with the in-person voting. For all those who prefer shaila number one, raise your hand. And do not raise your hand with two fingers up because that does not help me. For all those who prefer shaila number two, that was pretty even. Let's see what the Zoom
chad was saying.
Oh my gosh. Oh, okay, one second. Okay. How many votes for two? Three votes for two, three, four, five, six votes for one. Okay, it looks like one is gonna win. Did you lose? You lost. All right. The streak is broken. So we're going to start with shaila number one. So shaila number one is as follows. You always have to figure out, like, what are the issues? So first of all, we have to question, do we assume that any gerus that would be done is valid? Meaning, let's even assume that there's a reasonable chance that a gerus was done on this child when she was adopted, and most likely by a conservative beis din. So is that a valid gerus? Now, it is a trickier shaila with a katan than it is with a gadol. Meaning, if the gerus happened, it happened when she was a young child. It did not happen when she was a teenager. And that's a trickier shaila when she's a katan. Why is that a trickier shaila when she's a katan? Because what does a katan not require that a gadol does in gerus? Kabbalah's all mitzvahs. Kabbalah's mitzvahs, a katan can't be mekabla anything. The whole giur is only zach lo ladim shel b'fanav. So it doesn't require Kabbalah's mitzvahs. The major flaw in geirus outside of the Orthodox community is that there's no Kabbalah's mitzvahs. And without Kabbalah's mitzvahs, you don't have a valid geirus. Right? It's a very controversial issue in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not going to get into that issue and the political issues and what it means to run a medina that's Jewish, that has to deal with a lot of things like that. But leaving that issue aside, like on an individual case-by-case basis, in Chutz La'aretz, without a Kabbalah's mitzvahs, pashtus, you don't have a gerus. But what about a ger katan? So that complicates matters a little bit. And then the question is, we don't know that she had a gerus. We most of the time I was dealing with the shaila, we weren't even sure that she was actually adopted, but now we do know that. We do have that clarified. So then we have to discuss what's the story with the bishalakum. What if she cooks something? Is that going to be a problem of bishalakum? So let's start with the ger katan, with the ger katan issue. The ger katan issue is a fascinating issue. The Gemara Maseches Ksubos and Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, I always have a soft place in my heart for the sugya of ger katan because I remember when I was learning in Keren Biavne, we were learning Ksubos and Rav Shechter walked in. You know, he came in to say a shir. He was doing the rounds in all the yeshivas, like pre-COVID, like why Rashi Yeshiva used to do. So he walked into the yeshiva and I saw him go over to my Rebbe, Rav Silver, and he said, what Masechta are you learning? And Rav Silver said, Ksuvus. And he said, oh, what sugya are you up to? Where are you holding? He said, Daf Yud Aleph. He said, okay. And then they introduced Rav Shechter and he walked up and he said a shir on Ger Katan, just like that. So that was like pretty unbelievable. Rav Yonason Sachs used to do the same in Landers. I once asked Rav Sachs, like, how do you do that, which is like a silly thing to ask him, but he, you know, Barov Anvasnuso, he said, it's not like these yeshivas are learning the most esoteric topics. You know, these are the same five mesechtas I've said shir on my whole life. So, you know, it's pretty easy. from that perspective. But anyway, so Rav Shechter said a shiur on Ger Katan at the time. So the Gemara in Ksubas Taf Yud Aleph presents the halacha that a Katan can be converted by a Beis Din, even though the Katan has no das to even give any consent to the conversion. So Rashi says that the Beis Din becomes like the Av to the child, and the child is converted through the das of the Beis Din. So the Gemara explains that it's considered Zach Nadam Shlo B'Fanav, that even though the child doesn't have the ability to consent, it's a zechus to become a Jew. So Zach Nadam Shlo B'Fanav, it's to his benefit, and therefore we're allowed to do this for the child because it's a benefit. It's Geshmak to Zayin Yid. It's always good to be a Jew, so that helps him to be Geshmak to be a Yid, right? It's always good to convert him and let him be a Jew. For an adult, that would not work, because for an adult, without his consent, it's not necessarily a zechus for him. The Gemara says, because for an adult, it's a big mesiras nefesh to convert. The adult is used to eating nevelos and treifas. He is used to living a life that does not have 365 los essays and 248 essays. He's used to living a life that has only shav mitzvahs pnei noach, and now he's going to have to take on all this. It's a huge lifestyle change. That's not necessarily a zechus, but a child who was never taught am tam chet, who's never seen what it is to live a life of a non-Jew. So for him, it's a pure zechus when he's a child. So the Gemara says that yeah, but when the child becomes a gadol, he has the right to make a macha and say that I'm not interested, to reject the conversion, and then the mafreya, the whole conversion is not valid. So the Gemara says that if he does not, if he's higia to gadlus and he does not renounce his conversion, then that's it. Once he accepts it, so he can't say at the age of 13 at his bar mitzvah, yes, I want to stay a Jew, I want to remain a Jew, I want to be a Jew, and then at the age of 16 say, on second thought, you know, that's too late. That's once he has that opportunity to accept or reject, and he accepts, so that's it. So then he's a Jew. So Frektai says Akasha Tosus of the Ksubas Taf Yud Aleph raises a question. The whole concept of doing a gerus for a katan is very difficult, because the concept of Zachna Ladm Shlabafanov works midin shlichus. Zachia works midin shlichus. Ein shlichus l'katan. There's no shlichus for a katan. So how can you have a zachia midin shlichus if there's no shlichus for a katan? So Tosa suggests a number of answers. And the final answer Tosa suggests is that when we say that a katan is not included in shlichus, that's only where there's somewhat of a question whether it's really, really a zachus gamur for him. But over here, where it's so obviously a zachus gamur, when it's a zachus gamur, we can do zachna adam shlobafanov. Even the katan could have zachia. The katan could have zachia when it's an absolute zuchus gamur. So that brings us to our case, right? What if you have a child that's being raised by non-Torah observant parents, people who are not shomrei Torah u'mitzvos? Do you still say that knowing what kind of home the child is going to be raised in, that it's a zuchus gamur, that it's an absolute zuchus, and he's absolutely a Jew? So there are three approaches to this shaila. What would you tie in? What would you say? Yeah, but the Beis Din becomes an Av, but only if it's a zechus for him. Is it necessarily a zechus for him? So there are a number of poskim that say the question of whether the Beis Din is actually doing something that's a zechus for him really depends on the environment that he's being raised in. Because if you're going to make him a Jew, and now every Avera, every time he breaks one of the 365 Losa says that it's going to be an Avera, whereas had he remained a non-Jew, those things would not have been Averos. So did you really do him any favors? He's going to be raised to not eat kosher food. Every meal he has, he's going to be violating an Isser that otherwise would not have been an Isser. In the Tshuvas Zecher Yitzchak, Ravitzel Apanovich, Paskins, that such a Gerus is a Pasul Gerus, because we know he's going to violate the Dinim of the Torah, and to be adopted into such a home, if he as a Jew, would not be a zechus for him. In fact, in the Tshuvas Chavitzelas HaSharon, he also says that since it's obvious that he's going to be breaking the Torah, the dinim of the Torah, so it's not considered a zechus. And famously, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk in Tshuvas Das Kohen, Simon Kuf Mem Zayin, often referred to as Tshuvot Dat Kohen, but Rav Kuk never would have said it that way. So in the Tshuvas Das Kohen, Rav Kuk made a big melchama that he wanted the spoken Hebrew to be Ashkenazis, for Ashkenazim. He lost, but that was he very much wanted. So in the Tshuvas Das Kohen, he says that the Beis Din is it's only a zechus if you know that the child is gonna continue to observe Torah mitzvot as an adult. If he's going to be raised in a way where as an adult he's going to keep Torah mitzvot, and you can say that with confidence, then it's a zechus. Otherwise, it's not a zechus. Now, the Zeicher Yitzchak is a little different than the Rav Yitzchak Lapanovich is a little different than Rav Kook. The Rav Yitzchak Lapanovich seems to say that if it's clear that he's not going to observe Torah mitzvot, then it's not a good gerus. Rav Kook says, in order, it has to be clear that he will observe Torah mitzvot in order to be a good gerus. What falls in between is, what if you're not sure? It can go either way, right? I don't know, he's being raised in a family where half the kids are from, half the kids are not from, something like that. It can go either way. So that would be a point of contention between Rav Yitzchak Lapanovich and Rav Kook. But the basic idea they agree on is that if you see that he's not going to be raised in a family that observes Torah mitzvot, how can you say that that's a zechus? Then there is another shita. In the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak, Yerdea Madura Tinyana Simin Kuf Os Yud Aleph, he writes that it's still a zechus. It's still a zechus because Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelik L'Olam Haba, and everywhere that's what it's all about, to be able to have a Chelik L'Olam Haba. Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelik L'Olam Haba. It's Geshmak to be a Yid. Rav Chaim Ezer and Tshuvas Achiezer Chelik Gimel Simin Chav Ches also says this way, and the assumption is that how could you say it's not good to be a Jew? It's good to be a Jew, and the way Rav Moshe Feinstein formulates it, even though he sort of falls somewhere in between, the way Rav Moshe Feinstein formulates it is he's not going to know anything. So whatever averus he does is ba'ones. He was never educated otherwise. Whatever mitzvos he does, he's going to get credit for doing it. As a mitzvah v'yosa, he's going to get credit for doing. So, and you never know, maybe he'll fall into NCSY or some other wonderful Kiruv organization, and he'll turn out to be from. Maybe something will talk to him. Maybe he'll have some sort of yearning. He's going to be searching for something, and he'll find Torah. You know, there's probably a higher, I would imagine, among adopted children, there's a higher percentage that go searching for something, that feel that they're not 100% sure where they belong exactly, and they want to know. They question more, and they want to. So once that questioning starts, once that search starts, there's a reasonable chance he's going to find the MS. There's a reasonable chance that he's going to find Torah Judaism. And therefore, it's a zechus for the person. Rav Moshe sort of is in between. Rav Moshe Neven Ezra Chelik Dal Simul Chavav says that, even Jews who are Rishayim have Kedushas Yisrael. Whatever mitzvos they do are mitzvos. Whatever averos they do are a shogeg or an ones. But Rav Moshe says that we would regard such a child as a suffix Jew, so it's not an absolute that he's a Jew, but a suffix Jew. So that's the shita of Rav Moshe. So now that we know what the shita is, so what is the kid? If this girl had a conversion, she is a suffix Jew, right? So do we know that the girl had a conversion? We don't know that the girl had a conversion, but if she did, she's a Suffolk Jew. So if you don't know that the girl had a conversion, what would you say? Would you say Svek Sveka? Or would you say, nah, there's a good chance that she's Jew, that if it was a conversion, maybe it's better than 50-50 that she's Jewish. Maybe it's better than 50-50 that she had a conversion in the first place. She was adopted by a Jewish family, Jewish mother, Jewish father. So that is issue number one that we have yet to really resolve, other than to just, further confuse us. What about the Bishul Akum issue? Is it a problem with Bishul Akum if she cooks things in the house? So if a person might be a non-Jew, l'choro, we should have to be careful about Bishul Akum. However, there is a halacha that called Beiso Shel Yisrael. Tosos Mesachs Avod Zara and Daf Lamed Ches quotes two shitos where the Yisrael Bishul Akum applies when a non-Jew cooks food in a Jew's home. You think to yourself, what? That's a shayla? Every shayla we ever have of Bishul Akum is a non-Jew cooking in a Jew's home. But Tosus quotes two deis. A non-Jew cooks in a Jew's home. Is that Bishul Akum? So Rabbeinu Avraham ben David, the Ravid, says that the Yisr doesn't apply because the reason for the Yisr doesn't apply. Only when the non-Jew prepares food in their own home is there a concern of intermarriage. Is there a concern that it's going to lead to something? Rabbeinu Tam rejects that. He says that we don't find that Chazal made any sort sort of distinction in the Jews' home and the non-Jews' home. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. So we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. That's why we're so concerned about Bishlakim. But at least maybe as a sniff to be Mekil, that anyway, she might be a Jew. And even if she's a non-Jew, you have Beis HaShel Yisrael. And what's she cooking already? She's cooking noodles. Noodles might not be Yolel Shulchan Malachim. I mean, there are a lot of things you can put together to maybe suggest that it would not be a violation of Bishlakum. You know, there's and if you are concerned that it's Bishlakum, well then, you not only have to worry about the food that she cooks, you might have to worry about your kalim as well. It becomes much more complicated. You'd have to worry about your kalim as well. The Rashba and the Rush have a machlokas where the Bishlakum extends to the kalim as well, to asr the kalim as well. The Rashba says that not only are you not allowed to eat the food that a non-Jew cooked, but the kalim that cooked the food is also going to be asr. So in Shulchan Aruch, in Yardea, Kufyud Gimel, Siv Tez Zayin, the very last if in the simen on Bishlakum, how do we paskin? Are the kalim treif? Correct. The Shulchan Aruch quotes both days, right? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes two days on this issue. It quotes the sheet of the Rashba and the sheet of the Rush, but the sheet of the Rashba seems to be presented in Shulchan Aruch as the primary view, that that it's usher, that the kalim in fact are treifed up from Bishal Akum. The Shulchan Aruch, though, does present a kula, that even though you're normally not allowed to kasher klei cheres, over here you can do agala gimel pam. You can be mistari of shitos, that if you do agala three times and a klei cheres, that could work for kashering, together with the shita that holds doesn't even need kashering, so that would be enough. If you do agala gimel pam, you don't have to throw out your kalim. I happen to have walked into the... I don't know what they call it, the room on the sixth floor of the Rosh Yeshiva's lounge, or the Rebbe's room, or the copy machine room, I don't know, whatever it is. So I walked into that, I'm not a Rosh Yeshiva, so I'm allowed in, so I can't call it Rosh Yeshiva's lounge. But I don't know, the Rebbe's room, I guess. So I walked in, and Rav Shechter was sitting there on the couch having a tea, because he doesn't bring his tea to the Beis Medrash normally. He drinks a tea in the afternoon very often, he needs for his throat, and no sugar, of course, right? You know that, my son? Right, so he's sitting there having his tea, and it looked like, you know, he finally could, like, relax. Like, you know, whenever he's in the building anywhere, someone's always bugging him about something, right? They're always, so like, I was like, oh no, I have questions, but like, he looks like so relaxed. Like, should I, all right, you know, I'll regret it if I don't ask. So I said, sorry, Rabbi, too bad. I didn't say too bad, but like, I'm thinking, price you pay for being you. So, so I asked him these questions that we're going through tonight, and one of the things he mentioned, Derech Agav, is like Kashrin Kalim. He said, you know, what would happen? You have a person who wants to convert to Judaism. So first thing they do, before we, you know, on the Beis Din, before we convert somebody, we have to make sure that they know how to practice Judaism properly, right? I'm talking about an adult now, right? You make sure that they know how to practice Judaism properly. They have to know how to say brachos, they have to keep Shabbos, they have to keep kosher, they have to, like, we ask them, like, very practically, you're in a supermarket, and, you know, what are you looking for to see that something is kosher? And they say, oh, it's the U with the circle around it. You know, like, that's the right answer, right? Sometimes they'll say other things, but you know, so they look for the proper kosher symbols, and they, you know, they have to be able to you eat an apple. What bracha do you recite on the apple? And they say the bracha for us. You go to the bathroom. What do you say afterwards? What happens on Friday night when you come home from shul? What do you do? I mean, we just need to know that you can function as a Jew. So one of the first things they do, a person does when they're thinking about converting and they're starting to practice a halachically observant life, is they get rid of all of their kalim, because they have all these trefa kalim, and now they need to have two sets, one for milchings, one for fleshings. So they get rid of all their trefa kalim. Good. So they spend a year, 2 years, sometimes more, keeping kosher, and then the day of the conversion comes. The day of the conversion comes. Good. So they convert. There's a whole shaila whether you need tevilas kalim in such a case. There's a Shem Shmuel that says that the tevila of the ger counts for his kalim also. So we take that into consideration enough that we require a tevila without a bracha. We don't say a bracha in the tevila. That's the psak we got from Shachler. But what about kashering the kalim? For the last 2 years, these kalim were used only for kosher food, but bishlakum, the guy was cooking the whole time. So is he now going to have to go back? All the kelim he threw out already. Is all the kelim he threw out. Now we're going to make him go back and kasher all the kelim because of Bishul Akum? So Shach said there's a svara to be said that what's the chashash of Bishul Akum? It's Mishum Chasnus. Right? Who's he going to marry? Himself? You know, like he's the one that cooked all the food. So he said, Rosh Hashanah said, my impression is that the practice is that they don't kasher the kelim. Whenever he says something like that, my impression is that the practice is he's the posek for the Beis and Legir of all of, you know, America, pretty much. Like the largest Beis and Legir in America, where they convert hundreds of people a year, he's the posek for the Beis. So it's like your impression that the practice, you get to decide what the practice is. So he decided that the practice is that they don't kasher the kelim. So anyway, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that we normally, though, try to follow the more strict opinion. Okay, so now this girl, if she's cooking in the house, do we say that the kelim are going to be treif? So Rav Shachter pointed out that really, even though it's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch is machmir, the Shulchan Aruch should have been mekel. What does he mean by should have been mekel? He says there's a basic chakira. This was as between sips of his tea. So there's a basic chakira about what happens when you cook, when a non-Jew cooks something. What's the nature of Bishul Akum? Is it that Bishul Akum makes it a chefetz of machol sasuros? Or is it that, no, it's a kurva. It's like dancing with a guy who's also, you know, let her go dancing with a, you know, so this is another type of kurva that they cook for you. So he says there are three nafkaminas. Nafkamina number one, is there bittul b'shishim? Macholos asurus be bittul b'shishim. If it's just a kurva, maybe it would be bittul b'rov. Maybe you don't even need shishim. Nafkamina number two would be, can it be mutter once it's already asur? Meaning, let's say a non-Jew cooks it one third of the way. Can a Jew just now finish off the cooking? If it's a chafta macholos asurus, something that's already a chafta macholos asurus, you can't fix, you can't change it. But if it's not a chafta macholos asurus, so maybe there's still room to do something with it. And nafkamina number three, are blios of kelim a problem? So he says in the other two places, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like the tzad, that it's not a chafta of macholos asurus. And you're over here, you'd expect the Shulchan Aruch would say, so it's not a cheftz of machalos asurus, the blios are not a problem. But Shulchan Aruch quotes both deos and sides with the Rashba that it is a problem of machalos asurus. So he says, by rights, this should have been, the Shulchan Aruch should have been mekel. So maybe you can say that for this kind of case, that it's not going to trafe up the kelim. But Rav Shachter thought that you can't eat the food. That if she cooks something, you're not allowed to eat it, that it is a violation of Bishul Akum. I had the opportunity to speak with Rav David Cohen, because as soon as I got this Shaila, I said, well, wait a second, this is about adoption. Who is the world expert on adoption? The organization called Ohel. It's the organization I work for during the summer. They run a wonderful summer camp called Camp Kaylee. And Ohel is family services. They deal with Jewish adoption all the time. So who's the posek for Ohel? Rav David Cohen. How did I know that? Because Rav David Cohen came to visit Camp Kaylee this past summer. And I said, how did you get Rav David Cohen? He said, well, he's the posek for Ohel. So now I know. So Rav David Cohen's the posek for Ohel. So I called up David Mandel, who is the CEO of Ohel. I said, have you dealt with this before? He said, he said, let me get back to you in 2 minutes. And he got back to me 2 minutes later. He said, call Rav David Cohen in 10 minutes. He's expecting your call. So I was like, okay, now I know my way into Rav David Cohen. Normally Rav David has like an hour a day where he takes phone calls, and it's hard to get his attention because he's sitting there, yes, no, pull the plug, don't pull the plug, like you know, the most dvarim chamurim om de bruma shalolam, and it's just like a quick whatever. So I had the opportunity to talk to Rav David Cohen. Rav David Cohen thought, you don't have to worry about the Bishul Akum. Based on an Avnei Nezer, I did not chap what the Avnei Nezer says and what he's basing it off of. It's 7:58 already, so I could have said, well, we don't have time to get into it. but I really didn't chap what the Avnei Nezer said. So are they allowed to give up the child? That's really the question. Are they allowed to give up this child? So I spoke to Rav David Cohen. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke to Rav Shechter, and the fellow told me he spoke to Rav Asher Weiss. So here are the three diametrically opposed opinions. We have like a triangle of opinions over here. Rav David Cohen said, give up the child? Absolutely not! The child might be Jewish. There's a good chance the child is Jewish, Rav David said. He said, after all, a lot of the older conservative rabbis They know they're from people. They're Orthodox people. They're just the conservative rabbis because they needed the money or whatever. So it's a very good chance that they did a proper giur. This giur wasn't done yesterday. It was done 10 years ago. So even though the new face of the conservative movement, you wouldn't have much confidence in doing a proper giur. But 10 years ago, you probably or 15 years ago, they may have done a proper giur. There's a good chance that she's Jewish. Absolutely, you can't let a Jewish girl go to a Catholic home. The standards for ger katan aren't that high to begin with, and he said absolutely you got to keep her as long as you can. Cannot let her go to. Then I spoke to Rav Shachter. Rav Shachter said she's Mustama, not Jewish. So of course you shouldn't keep her around the house. You don't want a non-Jew around the house. I mean, obviously throw her out on the street or anything, but you deal with the family services and everything. You can't keep her around the house. I said, Rebbe, what about the conservative Beis Din that maybe converted her? He said, so what? He didn't think that even creates a suffix that she's Jewish. He said, Mustama, she's not Jewish. He said, the only sad that she'd be Jewish is if her birth parents, her birth mother was Jewish. But the Alpi Rov, Jewish, a significant Rov, Jewish people don't give up their children for adoption, for the most part. So he said, you can rely on that she's not Jewish. And he thought that there's no... That there's no obligation to keep her beyond what you would normally do. The fellow told me he spoke to Rav Asher Weiss, and that Rav Asher Weiss is also skeptical if she's actually Jewish, but thinks that she should not go to a different type of home because she thinks she's Jewish. And the fact that she thinks she's Jewish means that there's a much, much higher chance that she's going to see the light and she's going to want to be attracted to a more authentic form of Judaism and ultimately going to convert. And how she pursues that avenue when she seeks those answers in her life is going to be influenced very much by how the Orthodox family took care of her. And if she feels that they went out of their way for her and that they did everything they could for her, then she'll have a much more of a connection. And you have to chachamin of Barosho, you have to look not just at the situation right now, you have to look into the future. So three gedolei haposkim of our generation, three completely different shitos lahalacha. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you.
Oh, good Shabbos from Australia. Wow. Oh, Saul Levy, he's coming back to Yeshiva. Okay, amazing. Yes.
Even if she's not Jewish, isn't it like a problem?